If this podcast was like further along where you could put like a really funny quote from the show as the title, it literally would be like, it was never Bible study.
Yes! That's your title. I love it.
It's so true. Lisa Johnson, welcome to the Scarlet Edit. I am so happy you're here and I'm really, really looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks, me too.
So you had shared with me about your history with a husband who unfortunately was a serial cheater. And I thought that we were an interesting dynamic because I have not experienced what you have experienced. But as everybody who listens to my show regularly knows, I was the other woman in a long-term affair.
Yeah, sounds fun. I'm glad I can talk about it now and not have it bother me so much.
I bet. So tell me about your experience. What was that like and how deep into your relationship or marriage were you when you found out that there was infidelity happening?
So when we first got together, I'll just say my ex is 7 years older than me. And when we first got together, I was in my early 20s. I had just come back from living in Europe. I was like this free thinking backpacker, like woo. And he was one of my first kind of adult relationships where on paper everything looked great. And he actually had been my landlord for a little while. And when I told him I was moving out, that's when he sort of said, oh, let's have lunch. And so it started off like that. And then he seemed like he was the one who was interested in making this a more serious relationship. And we started having lunches together. And I remember one time we had dinner and it was almost as though he was interviewing me to be a candidate to be a wife. So he was asking me how much money I made, how many kids I wanted, if I wanted to be an at-home parent, like all this kind of stuff. And because I think he was older, it was flattering because I have to say nobody ever believes me. I was never physically attracted to my husband, but but there were other things that I was attracted to. And so part of it was like, wow, you know, he's so smart and he's so successful and he would consider someone like me. So just a couple months into our relationship, I moved in with him and I discovered maybe a few weeks later, there were phone numbers of other women in his wallet. I don't think I went into his wallet. I think he was cleaning it out. And I was just kind of baffled because he was the one who had encouraged us to get exclusive. And when I asked him about it, he said, well, you know, I've dated a lot of women and it's a little difficult for me to adjust to being exclusive. And I kept thinking but you were the one who wanted this. So that was my first sign.
Yeah. Well, like, what does that mean? Does that mean that these are old numbers or does this mean that you're still out actively collecting?
I'm just trying to, and he also was a bit of a hoarder. So he had lots of like messes anyway, but he was just like, it's no big deal. Like if you want, I'll throw them out kind of thing. So I didn't ask too many questions. And then we got married a couple of years later and I had gone to visit my college roommate for a few days. And when I came back, I can't remember what led us to this, but we had a long conversation and he acknowledged that he was having an affair. And I was like,
what?
This is crazy. Like we just got married. I am done. I'm not staying with you. Like this is before we have children. I can't believe this. And he tried to make it like, well, but we didn't sleep together. We just kind of made out in a parking lot. But his big thing was he said, I still had my wedding ring on as if that was.
'Cause that matters.
To him, it was like, that should matter to you because my loyalty was always with you. And I was just like, well, I'm done. And then he said, well, how about this? What if I go to therapy? And that had been a big issue for us because his mother had died before I met him. And he had a lot of anger towards his mother. And his sister had also said, you really need to go to therapy. So this was like the thing, like, I'll do anything for you. I'll even go to therapy for you. Not with me.
That was like the big dangling carrot.
Like, oh. And I just was kind of like, all right, like this could be an opportunity. but we'll see. And then he started going to therapy. He went to therapy for 2 years, and that was like, wow, because he was one of those people who was like, I'm not doing anything wrong. Like, I'm never going to go to therapy. But he went and supposedly worked through these issues.
So was he going by himself, or were you going as well?
No, no, I never once went. Okay. So he went for those couple of years, and I thought, and he said that the therapist said that the problem was that he didn't know how to get his needs met. I'm not just sexual, but like in general, that he needed to learn to advocate for himself. I look back, I'm like, I was so stupid and naive, because I never questioned. I just sort of believed it. Like, that was the problem, is that he needed to learn how to communicate better what he wanted.
Now, had you had experience going to therapy? So some of the things that he was saying, you were kind of like, okay, that makes sense? Or had you never been in therapy, so you were just believing everything because you didn't really have anything to compare it to?
Well, I had gone to therapy a little bit in high school. I had gone a little bit in college. Yeah. But I think the big thing was I just trusted him. Mm-hmm. I just believed that whatever he told me was the truth, even though it's like, but he was lying to me and cheating on me behind my back. Yeah. But maybe I wanted to believe him. And I thought, well, he's dedicated 2 years, or so he claimed, to going to therapy on a regular basis. So I just
that was going to be my next question. Was he really going that whole time?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, I look back on 20 years of deception that came later. And then it was like, I don't know what he actually was doing and wasn't doing.
Yeah. Isn't that so crazy when you have those like hindsight moments, like years later, and you're like, well, this is what I believed. This is what he said. So, I mean, in the time, like, I mean, obviously there are some things I still want to believe are true, but I think I would be so foolish if I was like, oh no, this is absolutely true. It's like, who's to know?
Yeah. I mean, there's things like even years after our divorce that I would be in the shower and be like, oh my gosh, like that could not have been true. Like, that was never true. Not just about affairs, but in general.
Just in general.
The crazy thing was, one of the things that attracted me to him was his judgment. He was older. Like I said, I thought he was super smart. He loved to read, very intellectual. And so I trusted his judgment. And he used to say things to me like, oh, Lisa, you know, our dynamic is you're so flighty and, you know, you travel and you just kind of like make decisions without thinking. And I'm the one who's more deliberate. And I like really think things through. So you need someone like me to kind of calm you down and to really think clear. And I believe that too, which wasn't true, because at the end of our marriage, he was making some crazy, crazy delusional claims that had not to do with fidelity, but like we had gotten part of our kitchen renovated because everything had kind of fallen apart. We got these new cabinets, and he was telling me that we couldn't put dishes in the cabinets because the weight would ruin them. Like the cabinets wouldn't hold the weight of the dishes. And so we couldn't go in there. We couldn't put them in there. We were going to have to put them in the drawers. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And he was like, what? No. Like, we can't use these cabinets. I'm thinking, then why do
we have the point cabinets?
I know. But at the time I was like, this, I know this doesn't make sense. And so we luckily had the contractor there. And I said, listen, he's saying this doesn't. And she said, absolutely not. Of course this, you know, you have to use the cabinets for dishes, and they are attached to the wall, and they stayed attached to the wall for the next number of years. But I think that was the first sign that I was like, something is really off with his judgment. Like, who believes stuff like that?
So before we continue down your marriage timeline, I have to ask, you made a comment at the beginning about you weren't physically attracted to him. So I'm curious if that played a role. Like, did you guys have a sex life? Was that a part of your relationship?
We did. But part of me just always felt like kind of cringy. Like our first kiss, I thought it was disgusting. Like I just was like, you know, people like they put their lips forward, like they pucker up. Yeah. He peeled back. I used to tease him when we were together. I'd be like, you're giving me like a beak. It's like a bird beak kiss. Like it just, he felt it always seemed like there was some wall between us. like from the very beginning when we were intimate, it was like from the very first time, it was always like something was off. And he tried to make me feel like it was me and that, you know, but I was very free when I was in high school and when I traveled, like I had no problem exploring intimately with other men and guys. And so I remember being like, this was never a problem in the past. But mm-hmm. with him, it was like an issue. It was like something had this like heavy feeling, and whatever I did didn't please him. He had all kinds of weird things with like control and losing control. And it felt like I was never going to be able to figure it out. And one thing that always bothered me was later on, or actually, no, I'm getting my dates mixed up. Right after when he was in therapy, he told me that the therapist had recommended that he train me, that I needed to do, yeah, what he wanted for 3 weeks straight. Like he had to teach me what he liked because whatever I was doing didn't fit his needs. So yeah.
That's insane.
I know. Well, when you're in the midst of this kind of, like, yeah. I didn't know about what emotional abuse was until long after I got out of my marriage. But I just accepted things. I didn't question. There were all kinds of interesting ideas he had about how things were. And when I would want things my way, he would say, oh, you're so vanilla. And I remember interviewing a sex therapist for our podcast who was just like, it's like an insulting way to basically control somebody. Is to make them feel like their needs and desires don't matter. And so you just say, oh you're so God. Vanilla. Yeah.
Yeah. That is horrible. I mean, that's wow. And then the irony of all of that too is that he's like out having affair after affair after affair after affair.
I wonder if my body knew that. Like on some level. You know, where you like from the beginning, even those phone numbers, maybe something in me. Part of the reason I was never attracted to him was because something in me knew that he had betrayed me and I couldn't trust him and he never earned my trust back.
Yeah. So what do you think that it was initially that despite not feeling attracted to him and feeling like there, like something was off, what do you think made you stay? What do you think made you marry him?
You know, it's such a good question. I was just thinking about this the other day and realizing something I didn't realize before. So part of it was timing and also the situation. Like I had graduated college. I had always dated like the types of guys that I generally had been attracted to were like men children. They were like gorgeous musicians, artists, like super cool and interesting, but in a lot of ways, not very responsible. And I was always like the responsible one and almost like a parental role where I had to like make sure that that things were taken care of. And that had been my last boyfriend before my ex-husband. And when I came, and so I had been living in Hungary, I had been teaching overseas. Nobody spoke English in this little village that I was in. It wasn't even in Budapest, the capital. It was in this little village. And so I think I was starved for intellectual stimulation. And so when I met my ex, like he again was an intellectual. My major was English. I keep saying I was always a major reader, like also an intellectual. And so having conversations with him was like, wow, like he's like a, like this is amazing. Like he's really smart. He's well read. One of my sounds stupid, but like fantasies as a child was like, I would love to meet someone who we can just like read in bed together. Like that's what I really wanted.
Cute, though. Yeah.
And so I thought, here's someone that I could do this with. He was well educated. And I think when we first met, he also mirrored what I wanted. So I had been traveling. We lived near New York City. He was one of these people. He loved going to live music, out to restaurants, trying different things. So we had that in common. And also part of me thought, I want to like be with someone and have more of an adult relationship. And I should probably start settling down. I was like 22 or 23. I was like, I should start settling down and like find like a real job and, you know, kind of grow up already. And so on paper, like I said, he fit that. Like, Yeah. He was, you know, he was a software guy. He had been living on his own. He had property. He just seemed like responsible and intelligent and interesting. Yeah. And that drew me to him. And in my mind, I thought, well, you know, there's sacrifices you make in a relationship. So I'm not physically attracted to him, but I could see having like a long-term future, and also having come from basic poverty from backpacking and living in this third world country at the time. It was right when communism left. I think the feeling that I would be secure with him, that I wouldn't, I was thinking like our children would never be poor. Like I wouldn't have to worry about being the responsible one, like having to take care of everything financially, like that drew me to him. So even though people like to say, okay, when there's domestic violence, like one person's all good and one person's all bad, like there's relationships are complex. And so I also felt like he was the first person that I felt like my mother found acceptable too.
Oh.
And I wanted my parents to approve on some level, even though my dad at the very beginning was like, you shouldn't be with him. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I think he kind of made me look good in a certain way too, because I had been doing my free thing. And then it was like, okay, now I'm settling down and, you know, I'm with someone who's successful. So it made me feel more grown up to be with someone like him.
Okay. I mean, I can definitely relate to that feeling like you're dating like a man, like someone who's older and wiser, and when you're younger and you're like, ooh, this is kind of cool. Like this is fun. Like he's done more than me. He's seen more than me. He's smart. And
he could help take care of me.
Yeah.
Like and instead of me taking care.
Right. Totally. And I think, too, one of the things that you said that I don't think is talked about often enough is that intelligence connection and being able to sit and talk with somebody about things that you're really passionate about that aren't, you know, maybe they aren't very common, or maybe you haven't experienced it before, but it's a big part of who you are. And then being able to sit and just go off on a topic and feel like the person is like right there in it with you, that can be so just like a breath of fresh air.
He was really good at acting like a great listener. He was a master at making me, and I think other women, feel like he was really, really paying attention. So that was definitely, I had forgotten about that. But yeah, and I mean, that's something he actually would do when we'd go to parties. He loved talking to women. He was always like, and he loved talking to women who were abused. He was always like drawn to people because he'd like compare his own story. That's like a whole other thing. But yeah, he always played a very good listener.
Interesting. So, okay. So as your relationship continued and he went through his therapy, and, you know, there's obviously something there that continued to make you to stay. So you're in this. What comes next? Do you end up having children? Do you find out that he's cheated on you again? Is it all of the above?
No. So he went to his therapy for a couple of years. And then it was probably around that time that we had our first child. And one of the things that he did was he was physically present. He changed his work schedule. So it was a 4-day work week and he was home a lot. And it just like he was around. And I think to the outside world, especially to my new mom friends, are like, oh, my God, you're so lucky. Like my husband works all the time and yours is taking time off on Fridays. So we'd take trips. We'd go away for the weekend. Like we just did a lot of things that I like to do, like go out and about. And so it seemed like he was a devoted husband and father. And I mean, you know, we got along really well. We didn't really fight. And he seemed like he played the role very, very well. And then we had our daughter a couple of years after our son, you know, 3 years after our son was born. And then it was just like the family life and the community. And I got involved with a lot of PTA stuff and library stuff and all of that. And I just like had my life and he was there. He was not very interested in spending time with the kids on his own. But when we were home, he was just around a lot.
Okay. So would you say during all of that time period, you were happy?
I thought I was happy. I mean, I felt content. I felt like I loved being a mother. I had been teaching English. I took off for when our first child was born. I thought I'd go back to teaching because I love teaching. And then I ended up staying home for a while. I mean, it's like I wasn't exactly a stay-at-home mother. I was a stay-at-home mother, but I always had other jobs, but I worked from home. And then he made enough money. So I was really grateful that I could stay home and do all my other little businesses and still be with the kids. I started a writing career. So I really appreciated that. So I did feel content. But every few years, he would come out of nowhere and say something like, you know, I'm really unhappy in this relationship. And if something doesn't change, I'm going to leave you. And I would be like, what? Like out of nowhere, like he'd be acting completely fine. I know. Later on, his therapist was like, that is the most awful thing. I think one of the most awful things that someone could do to somebody else when everything is fine, it seems fine, then just announce like, I'm really miserable. I might leave and not say why, what the problem is, and then just act like everything is fine again. And then I was just sort of like, I don't know.
I mean, that has to throw you off. I mean, the first time, I'm sure you were just like, wait, what? What's happening? What can I do? Let's talk about this. And
he
didn't want to talk about it. He just wanted to make that statement and then go off and have a salad.
No. And then right before, so we were together for nearly 20 years, right before I discovered like the affair that led to the divorce, he did that. And then he was like, you need to, I'm really unhappy. So basically for the next 2 weeks, every single day, we need to have sex the way that I like it only. Otherwise, I'm going to cheat on you. And I was just like, oh my, I remember we were in New Mexico on vacation in this really nice restaurant. And I was just like, cry. Like, I don't like to show my emotions in public and cry. And I remember just being like crying at the table during a Christmas dinner and feeling like completely alone. And then we came back, we were going to a concert in New York City. And I was like, it's been 2 weeks. Like, I've done everything that you've wanted, you know, and he was still like very, very distant. And I just got the sense like it's never enough. And throughout the relationship, it seemed like there were things, there were always secrets. Like he always had kind of his secret, like online stuff, but I didn't really question because he was an IT guy. That was part of his job. When I came into the relationship, he was like, oh yeah, you know, like I'm super smart. Like I'm really gifted and it's very hard for me to connect with people. And like, no, you know, you're smart, Lisa, but like, nobody can like be as smart as me. I mean, I'm making it sound like ridiculous now, but he convinced me that he was like so smarter than most people that he needed to connect almost like in some Mensa group, you know, with other people who were that smart. Yeah. So that's why, you know, sometimes he would like be in chat rooms with people, like talking about things that the rest of the world couldn't understand, philosophy, stuff he read, like things that wouldn't be interesting to me. So there was always like these walls and, like I was happy, but I'm like, I'm never going to like really, really like connect with him ways I have in the past with certain people, because that's just how he is. But you know, this is like, I made this choice. I made this commitment and that's how it is. And so those couple weeks, so right before the final, when he's like, if you don't do what I want, like, I'm going to cheat on you. Me being like, I don't know what you want me to, like, I'm doing what you want and you're still unhappy and it's my responsibility to make you happy. Again, and this is like, I realized later, especially with my career, like, this is a huge part of emotional abuse and domestic abuse.
The control. I mean, and I'm sitting here thinking like, even like sexually, it's like, how could you even have been like even remotely interested in doing what he wanted to do, because you're feeling like you have to, or you have to perform in some way, or you have to be this version or this vision or this character he's created in his mind that will satisfy his needs. And like, how not fun and I mean, it's like, you're basically using for you for like a masturbatory vehicle. I mean, you're not, intimate in any way. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, so I usually don't talk about this stuff on podcasts, but I will because it's appropriate, I think, for this topic. But he would spend a lot of time and he would write these scripts, literally like 2 to 3 page scripts of like what I had to say and then what he was going to say. And then I'd have to like wear certain things. And I'm I always joke about this one outfit. It was like, I felt like a flamingo. It was like this like pink fluffy thing with feathers. And then this like perfume that would make me sneeze. I remember just being like, oh, I hate this. And then like, if I couldn't memorize like a line, or I wouldn't say it right or do it right. And I didn't really know exactly because it didn't really make sense to me. He'd get like really angry and just be like, this is why, I'm not happy. It's because you're not doing things right. Like, yeah.
Because you didn't marry an actress who's at your, who wants to,
star.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking to myself, like, now in retrospect, do you look back and think, was I insane? Like, how did you justify this in your own mind? Because
there's so many levels to this, coming out of a 20-year relationship that involved deception the entire time. So back to the whole affair thing. I mean, during our divorce, when I first split from him, I discovered copies of personal ads where on our honeymoon, he was soliciting other women. He was writing drafts of personal ads to put in the old Village Voice in New York City. That was like the place where people, like, that's what he was doing. And he did it our entire relationship. During our dating, during our marriage, the whole time through the marriage, like going through the stuff at the very end, the last 2 years of the relationship were like hundreds of email, like I will never get to the bottom, all kinds of stuff that it's unfathomable, the level of deceit.
So you guys started out pre-technology, pre-apps. So what a journey that must have been, to Village Voice ads to like dating apps, I assume, by the end.
I don't know. I mean, so I was like a teacher. I'm like one of those technophobes. That's just like, I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to use email. I mean, I still have an AOL email address that he sent.
Oh, I love you. That's amazing.
I mean, I have like my work email, obviously.
Yeah.
But I still, that's my main one. It's like, I can't let go. And so he understood like AOL chat rooms and all that stuff. Oh. I don't know. I guess, there must have been apps. Yeah, there were apps when we left, but when we split, but he knew so many different ways to solicit women. I mean, so much stuff came out during the discovery process of our divorce where it was like laughable. I mean, trying to hire a woman in Canada who would like come to his house and like build a sex dungeon, and they're negotiating price. I mean, me and my lawyer actually had some great laughs over it. It was like,
I bet.
Wow.
Oh my God. So... Okay, so this is wild. So finding all of these things, do you have any idea how many women he actually connected with and had relations with?
No.
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 Wow.
But I know the one that I found out about. So that was one where, I mean, do you want me to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, because I know. Well, so I'm just like blown away by so many of this. This has been a journey that I mean, we're going left, right, center, all the places. This is so crazy. You should write a book, by the way.
I have.
I think everybody would read it.
Yeah. but it doesn't include all these details. But
oh, my gosh. No, but I think that like it is. I know that I have listeners who hopefully cannot relate to every single thing that you are sharing, but can relate to a lot of these things, unfortunately. And, you know, finding that final straw where they found, you know, maybe they connected with a woman, or they had that, you know, meetup or whatever it was. So I am very curious how you finally found the last person and you were like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. So actually, my ex was always a slob, and I'm sloppy too, but like he was like a major slob, and he also saved things, especially papers. And so
it's interesting for someone who's got such a hidden private life that they would be sloppy. You would think someone like that would be very meticulous.
No, I mean, and that's how I was able to find out so much and be like blown away. But anyway, so He had a bunch of stuff up in our attic and he enlisted our son to help him clean stuff out. And I was like thrilled because I was, wow, great. Like you're finally cleaning out some of that mess. So he had put a bunch of papers in one of those clear storage bins and had my son carry it downstairs. Our offices were downstairs, like kind of like next to the basement. And I had to walk through his office to get through my office. And one day he was like getting supposedly all the, you look back now, an oil change that took 2 hours. Everything took at least 2 hours. So he was gone and I walked through his office and a picture, a printout, a color photograph from the computer caught my eye. And it was this very young woman. Now, remember, I taught high school, so I know what teenagers look like. It looked like a teenager. He claimed she was 23. I don't know. But making, you know, dressed like normal, but like provocative look into the camera. And I just had this immediate feeling that something was wrong. And there were two pictures of her making, you know, these faces almost like from a cam, like somebody took a screenshot from a cam or whatever. Okay. And so I called him and I was like, I just found these pictures. Like, what is this? And he goes, oh, well, you know how I've started drawing again? Like I've been printing pictures off the internet of people. And I just knew in my stomach, like, you know, you get that feeling like where it's like, it's not even what you've discovered being bad. It's that they're lying to you. That's worse. Mm-hmm. Like acid in my stomach, which is like, I just kept saying, please tell me the truth. Like, I know this is not what it is. Can you just please tell me the truth? He kept making up different stories and I just kept persisting, feeling sicker and sicker and sicker. And then finally he said, okay, fine. That's my girlfriend. And I was just like, oh. And then he goes, yeah, I met her on Spotify. She's from Germany. We're completely in love and I'm going to move her to America and set her up in one of my dad's apartments. But I'm trying to figure out what to do. Because, you know, like I love her and I love you. And I just, that was the moment I'm like, we're completely done. Like, this person is so freaking delusional. Like you met someone that's your girlfriend from Germany that you're moving here. And I was like, well, what about our kids? He's like, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. Oh my God. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And I just thought, we're done. And just like life was a blur for the next few days. And then he said, well, I need to figure out what we're going to do. It was still that I need to figure out what we're going to do. So disregard for me. And I mean, I allowed it because I wasn't making decisions at that point. Mm-hmm. And he said, I talked to my therapist, the same one from all those years ago, like 16 years before. And she said that we need to go to couples counseling to decide if we should get a divorce. And I was just like, I don't know. Yeah. So 6 months, $200 an hour every single week to figure out, because only then would I be able to make an informed decision. And
according
I was just like, well, I don't, and then it was like, but suppose, and I never talked to the therapist directly up until then, but supposedly the therapist said, you're going to love this one, that he has to choose. You know, if he's going to commit to the marriage, he's going to have to break up with this girlfriend. So he claimed that he was having such a hard time and that he would need 2 weeks to figure out this decision of what he was going to do.
Oh my God.
While we're still living in the house. And that if he broke up with the girlfriend, which he thought he was going to do because he kind of wanted to keep the marriage together, and I had to keep waiting. But then she was giving him an extra week to make the decision. So then it became 3 weeks. And in the meantime, I'm hiding all this from the kids, my life, family, you know, everything.
Oh.
That I would be the one responsible for helping him deal with his grief over the breakup with the girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is literally insane. I mean, and it's crazy as you're telling me this, like, I feel like there's all these little moments where different relationships that I have been in are like popping into my mind that I haven't thought about in years. And I'm thinking like, that was totally insane. That was totally insane. And I'm like, and at the time I totally remember being like, oh yeah, this is perfectly normal. I had a boyfriend once after college and he like could not figure out if he wanted to commit to me or not. Mm-hmm. So I remember going to the gym one night and talking to one of my friends at the gym and telling him, oh, well, you know, he's meeting with his men's Bible study tonight, right, and then he's going to let me know. And I remember my friend was like, what? Like, you're waiting for him to go to Bible study before he's going to tell you if he wants to be your boyfriend? Like, do you not hear the words that are coming out of your mouth?
Right. Like, he's not going to Bible study. It's not Bible study.
It's not Bible study. It's not Bible study. Oh my God. Right? Oh, it was never Bible study.
Yeah. Mine was, I'm going to my therapy group. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My abuse recovery. Sure. He was going to mine was going to his abuse recovery group.
Yeah. Oh my God. If this podcast was like further along where you could put like a really funny quote from the show as the title, it literally would be like, it was never Bible study.
Yes. That's that's your title. I love it.
It's so true. Oh my God. I love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, okay. So crazy. Did you, at that point, were you like, fuck this. I'm done. Like, I'm not doing this.
I was, but I wasn't because I had these two children.
And how old were they at the time?
Let's see. So we did separate when they were like 11 and 14 ish. So this was not 9 and 12 ish, something like that.
Okay.
So they were tweenish. Maybe a teeny bit younger because the divorce took like a year and then there was the 2 years before that. So yeah. But let's see, where were we?
After the 3 weeks and you were going to have to help him with his grief.
Oh yeah. Yes, yes, yes. So
does that make sense?
Oh, you said, so was I like, I'm done with this. Yes. Okay. So I was done, but one of the things that he got to me with, he said, if you ever divorce me, you're going to be the one responsible for ruining our kids' lives because you're breaking up an intact family. That really got to me. Yeah. So my parents had been married for like 60 something years. Like, we didn't have divorce in my family. And I would have been the first one to get a divorce. Mm. Actually, thinking back, my grandmother got a divorce. So, but anyway, but I just felt like I didn't want to ruin my kids' lives. I couldn't afford a $10,000 divorce. My divorce, of course, costs $100,000 plus another, 9 years in court. But I just thought, I will do anything I can if there's any chance of keeping this together. And if he can admit his delusion and denial, then we could work with something. So maybe I can get these therapists, because that was just one of three different rounds of couples therapy. If I can get a therapist to show him how he's being so out of his mind and none of this makes sense, then we could move forward. So it was like, I'll commit to it because I don't want our kids to be uprooted. I don't want to be responsible for destroying lives without thinking like, but he's the one. Like, his behavior is the one that's destroying lives. It's destroyed my life. But I just thought, well, let me, again, like, make every effort to try. Because that was the dynamic in the relationship. I keep trying. I keep trying to be better, 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 and it's never good enough.
Never.
So he committed. He swore to the therapist and to me that he had broken up with his girlfriend, love of his life.
Had he ever even met her if she lived in Germany, by the way?
No. He claimed he did. Well, there's more to that. Remind me to get to the part two when he did meet her. Anyway, So we started going to this therapy, and the therapist, and I learned in my domestic violence advocacy training, you never go to couples counseling with an abusive person. But then again, one in two people in abusive relationships don't realize that what they're dealing with, which was me. So I went to this counseling, and the therapist, she shouldn't have seen us because she was his therapist. So she was his ally. So it was very unethical, which of course I didn't realize at the time because she was like Columbia professor. Oh, this is fine. So she's like, I'm going to help you. And then she immediately got into how we need to shelve Lisa's feelings and focus on why he's so unhappy in the marriage. So what did I do? So she basically compounded the abuse in terms of making me feel like it's my fault. And that we're not going to deal with my feelings. Let's deal with his feelings. Let's focus on him. Perfect. Like, perfect for a narcissist to be like, it's all about me. Yes. And now my therapist is saying it's all about you. And then at some point she said things to me like, I should be grateful that this is an online affair because at least it's not in my neighborhood and I don't have to drive down the street and see this person.
Okay, this is a terrible therapist. I hope she's no longer practicing.
Oh, this woman had lots of accolades. She's very well regarded. I mean, I don't know. I don't care. I'm done with that. I'm just like, at the end of all of it, I did say to her at one of the last appointments, I was like, were you aware of like a bunch of things I had just found out? And she was like, no. And I'm thinking, well, he manipulated her too. He totally lied to her. Yeah. So, yeah. So during that time, you know, as we were going through this, unfortunately, my son's best friend killed himself on the first day of school and it became like international news and I was on CNN. So there was like all this other stuff that got distracting. When that happened, he told the therapist that it brought our family closer together and we didn't need therapy anymore. So because now everything's much better. Now, at the same time, like literally a couple of weeks after he told the therapist this message, I found out later, he was still going to work like full time during the day and coming back. He had apparently taken a vacation from work, flown in this person from Germany, supposedly, and was spending time with her in a hotel, sleeping with her unprotected, and then coming home and sleeping with me, acting like everything was wonderful in our relationship. Geez. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that came out much later. Right. So this whole time like I said, it took 2 years to get out, and starting with that first couple's counselor, there was so much deceit towards me, towards every single therapist that we worked with. I mean, it just made it so much worse.
I feel like you just gave a whole new meaning to the phrase, like, I've been through it.
Well, with that been there, story. Got it. That's my
yes.
That's our name.
I know. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm like, but so as we keep going, so I mean, this is wild. So you were so. How would you even classify this man? Like, I mean, this need for attention. It, in one regard, I mean, I don't know about the levels of intimacy. Was he just needing that like female attention, like people to find him mysterious and sexy and attractive? Was he a sex addict? I mean, was it all of the things?
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So did you ever, I mean, God, and I pray that you didn't, did you ever get any sort of diseases or anything sexually transmitted through all of this? Were
I think so. I think so.
Mm,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did get tested. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I remember being so angry about that and confronting him with it, being like, how could you put my life in danger? And he was like, well, I love this other person. She wasn't with anybody else. I'm like, how could you believe something like this?
That sounds like something a high school kid would say. Like,
well, that's the thing. People like him are stunted. They are stunted emotionally. Mm-hmm. So it is like, I mean, younger than high school, but very juvenile.
I mean, I feel like that's like literally like what conversations some of my friends who have high school age daughters are. They're like, okay, you know, even if you're on the pill, you still need to use condoms. Well, why? I can't get pregnant if I'm, you know, on the pill. Well, yeah, but like, you don't know that he's only sleeping with you. What do you mean? He might be sleeping with someone else. You don't know, kid. You don't know.
Right.
So, but yeah, that sounds like a high schooler thing to say. Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now you're on the other side of all of this. And you've changed your career, you've changed your life. And tell me a little bit about what that looks like.
Okay, so like I said, the divorce, which I thought was going to be amicable and easy after all the therapy and the nonsense and like, all right, obviously we cannot stay together, ended up taking a year and costing $100,000. And then at the end of that, my wonderful divorce lawyer, who my ex threatened to kill, because he, you know, was part of helping get me out of this relationship.
Of course.
Said, your ex isn't going to comply with the orders. You can't keep affording me. I always say I'm paying back these loans forever just to get away from him. But you're going to have to go pro se, which means represent yourself. So, because you can't, he's just going to decimate you. So, so I did. And I spent 7.5 years in court representing myself as my ex refused to pay for our kid, you know, his share with the, you know, our child, our children's education, things we had agreed to. He just played games with. There was just all kinds of court stuff. I was constantly having to go to try to get our orders enforced. I always say that justice and karma took a long time, but they were finally served beautifully. In the process, my case was published as case law for the state, which is unheard of for someone who represents wow. herself. It's like a big deal.
Good
for a lawyer.
You.
Yeah. So that was really huge. Yeah.
That's like when they wait. So just so I'm clear. And so anyone listening is clear. That's when like a lawyer in court will be like, oh, well, per Baker v. Baker, yeah. like yes, this is yes, why I yes. can do whatever. OK, yeah. I do watch a lot of court shows. So that's why yes. I was like, maybe that's what that is. Cool.
Yeah, so mine is. Yeah.
Good
mine
for
is,
you.
Connecticut case law. Yeah. From March of 2021. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I argued that myself. So, yeah, I always say I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah, you involved. Should be. That's outstanding.
Yeah. And, yeah. And then, was able to help get something called Jennifer's Law passed in my state. So Connecticut became the third state to expand our legal definition of domestic violence to include something called coercive control. So all that invisible abuse, emotional, psychological, oh. verbal, financial, sexual, legal abuse, revenge porn, stalking, isolation, digital abuse, all of that is now looked at and taken very seriously when it comes to orders of protection and custody arrangements. And so that happened while I was still, I mean, I was part of that movement. And then also I ended up in front of the judge who kind of was involved with the case that Jennifer's Law was named after. And I was terrified, but I was arguing Jennifer's Law in terms of legal abuse to that judge. And she ended up giving me some of the best orders ever, which finally finished the case after all those years. So really grateful for that. My ex then tried to sue my partner, Chris, and I for $4 million in defamation in civil court. We got that thrown out. And then I always say our first baby came out. It's called Been mm-hmm. There, Got Out, Toxic Relationships, wow. High Conflict Divorce, and How to Stay Sane Under Insane Circumstances. We specialize in something called legal abuse, which is where one person's ex is basically using the legal system to wear them down and bleed them dry financially. So obviously, I always say I got my best education in the trenches and bring a lot of authority yeah. to the topic. At this point, my partner, Chris, and I, he's the male half of Been There, Got Out, but we have been a couple for more than 10 years. He is, aww. You know, the love of my life. It is a completely different experience. He also experienced dealing with a very unhealthy marriage with children, with one of those types like my ex, uh-huh. just on different ends of the spectrum. And our current book is coming out in a few months. It's called When Your Ex Turns the Kids Against You. And so that's a whole other thing we're working on. And we meet with men and women all over the world now. We have a very thriving business and helping them deal with these types of people in and out of the legal system. How do you co-parent with one of these people? And yeah, I always say like all roads led to this.
Yeah. I mean, what a story of redemption.
Yeah.
Like to just completely 180 your life after going through all of this, surviving all of this, and then fighting your own battle in court. I mean, so here's a question.
I want to tell you something about that too. Quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Great question. The irony Please. Is that at the end of our relationship, those 2 years of hell before getting out, my ex would walk around with these notebooks that he would scribble in. And I remember being mm-hmm. like, what are you doing? And he's like, so, you know, I mentioned that he had his diagnosis. And when someone has that diagnosis, there's only 10% chance that they could keep their marriage together. But he no. was writing, when he told me, he said, I am going to become a motivational speaker on how a sex addict can manage to still have a successful marriage. And I'm going to be going around the country talking about this and, you know, because our marriage is staying together. And I remember being like, you're out of your mind. Like, that's the level of delusion that we had gotten yeah. to. And the irony of like, no and yes.
Wow. That is crazy. That is truly crazy. Like, I mean, when I say like there should be like a Netflix series about your life where they have actors just portray this whole story, because that was just unreal. I mean,
I was, as the kids say, I was sat listening to all of that. So, but here's my question. After everything that you did for yourself in the legal system, after having a court case named after, you know, named after your...
Jennifer's law, that's called? Separate, but my, so no. mine is case law. Mine is case law.
Okay. Yeah, so having you, yours Johnson be a case law. So from a, like, do you get any sort of like degree or like law? I mean, you're probably better than some lawyers at this point.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing is like, everyone's like, why don't you become a lawyer? Like I, when I was in high school, I considered becoming a lawyer, but I don't really want to do that. I mean, I think the law is fascinating, but I like doing what I'm doing as a high conflict divorce strategist because I'm not geographically limited. Like we can, we have many lawyers who are our own clients who say, I love what you guys do because you think so out of the box. So my creativity, my background as a high school English teacher and professional writer, like I'm able to teach the art of persuasion. I'm able to actually help people and see them transform. And from going through this process, both Chris and I have what we call radical empathy because we've lived it. And so we really connect closely to our clients and our community and our broad audience of men and women all over the world. And it is so satisfying and rewarding to think that I was a teacher and I couldn't go back to teaching because I was always in court. And now like pivoting and being able to teach on a global level about something that prevents intergenerational trauma and saves people's lives, saves kids' lives and their families' lives by taking care of the parents who are going through something like this. So I love it. I absolutely love this career. I can't imagine doing anything else after this.
What an absolute, again, redemption story. This is amazing. I am so excited for you. I can just feel your passion and how excited you are. I mean, I feel like you get up in the morning, like just ready to go, excited to go and do what you're doing. And
And our clients are so successful in and out of family court. Many of them end up representing themselves like me going pro se. And we have a, you know, those like waving tube balloon people outside used car. That's our victory sign. And so when we have a weekly legal abuse support group where we have our men and women together, and when people are noting progress that they've made or successes, we'll like take out our little mini waving balloon man and do that. And we also have a little section in our newsletter that's called From Puddle to Ninja, because our clients meet us in this state of fear and like, oh my God, what's going to, like the way I was, there was like, oh my God, I don't know who to believe. And blah, blah, blah. And then we turn them into a fighter where they're just like, no, I'm going to take you down. I'm not going to allow you to control my life anymore. And to see them, you know, get this, their ex's voice out of their heads and to move on and have these amazing new careers. Like we have a client who was getting bottles thrown at her face, all kinds of awfulness. She is now, and she's an Indigenous woman. So she's now a lawyer after we worked together because she was so successful as a pro se in court. Only 2% of attorneys are who she is, Indigenous women attorneys who are trauma informed. And now she's helping her community. So the ripple effects of my story and what we do, and it's just, it has reach and it's only a good thing.
That's amazing. So I love what you said about how you didn't want to go and get your law degree because that would limit you to your state, right? And now you can work with literally people all over the world. So do you have lawyers that reach out to you for like consultations or to like give you their clients to kind of help do things that they can't in the process?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things we teach more than anything is something we call strategic communication, because everything is like how you communicate with your ex. And a lot of our clients are really triggered by having to co-parent with their ex because of the control dynamic. And so we have a course called How to Communicate with Your Ex Without Destroying Your Case or Losing Your Mind. So attorneys, they are trained in logic and their job is to really translate your case into the law. Our clients are very, very needy because they're so terrified and they're dealing with all the domestic violence stuff. And so a lot of lawyers, including my own lovely divorce attorney, are like, please don't send me your clients. Like, I don't want, I don't need the drama. Like, I don't need to make lots of money off one person. Like, please, no. So many lawyers only deal with these cases of only 10 to 15% of the time. Chris and I exclusively deal with these cases. We've had hundreds of clients in just the past few years. And so because we only do this, we have expertise in this area. So we do work with a lot of lawyers and mental health professionals, because therapists also don't understand the trauma of legal abuse, where the system that you're turning to for relief, like for me, even the therapist, is making things worse. And so it really, you know, you really need to have a team helping people in situations like these, a lawyer, a therapist who's trauma informed, not like the ones I had, high conflict divorce strategist. And if you have not been isolated, your friends and family, but often they don't understand, because as you see, this is mind blowing. Like the way our brains change when we're in these kinds of relationships where we're not necessarily getting hit. I mean, there was physical abuse in my marriage at the end, but most of these things, they lead up to that. And so people don't take it as seriously. So it's really important to get people educated on like what domestic violence really looks like. And knowing so much now, I can look back on my marriage and be like, oh my gosh, like the lying by omission where I didn't have control over my own life because he was living a double life. I didn't have choice in what was happening to me because things were hidden. Like that's abuse. That's
absolutely
not fair.
Oh my gosh. So I love podcasting. I love having conversations with people because I had no expectations for which direction this conversation was going to go. And it went exponentially better than I could have ever tried to map out, because you are just so engaging. You're such a joy to speak with. Thank you so much for your vulnerability, for your honesty, for sharing your journey. And I am like so grateful to know you, and I'm so proud of you, and I'm so excited that you have done this 180 and that you are now helping so many people. And I guarantee that my audience is going to just be so inspired by you and also learn a lot from you. So thank you, Lisa, so much for being here.
No, my pleasure. And thanks for letting me talk about some things that I never usually get the chance to talk about, because certainly our clients aren't interested in my old sex life.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And thank you for sharing, though. Tell everybody how they can find you, because I know you have a ton of great resources.
Yeah. So super easy. BeenThereGotOut.com is our website. Our book is Been There, Got Out. Our next book is also going to be called that, with a different subtitle. And, you know, When Your Ex Turns the Kids Against You. We have our courses. I'm on all social media channels, pretty much under Been There, Got Out on Instagram. That's our home base. Just Been There, Got Out with little underscores between. We have a podcast, we have a YouTube channel, and we have our weekly legal abuse support group. So it's just Chris and I. Just get a hold of us, Lisa@BeenThereGotOut.com or Chris@BeenThereGotOut.com, and we will answer you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here and showing up with me every week. If you have not already, please go on Apple and give us a 5-star review. Love to hear your comments. So the DMs are always open, and we will see you next week.